of the crop.
Welcome to the 148th edition of the Gooner Podcast. This is your host, Kevin Witcher, and we are recording on the Wednesday evening after Arsenal's visit to Paris Saint-Germain to claim a Champions League point to begin their European campaign this season. So without further ado, let's start with panel introductions. First up, our last podcast was back in May, and he's been good enough to return to ensure we have a full panel, and not only that, he hasn't slept since Monday night due to covering the PSG match and then not sleeping due to catching a Eurostar back to London at the crack of dawn. He did find a couple of hours to have a drink in between finishing work and catching the train, so forgive him if he crashes out at some point in the next 50 minutes plus. It's a very warm welcome to a regular Gooner contributor, Mr. Laith Youssef.
Cheers, Kevin.
Next, an occasional columnist on the Gooner website and making his second appearance on our podcast. He's a lover of fine wine, and he would argue even finer music, and he persuaded me to travel to Paris in July to see a Bruce Springsteen concert, something I had not done for close to 30 years. Let's see if his powers of persuasion on matters Arsenal are equally influential. It's a pleasure to say hello again to Mr. Ian Henry.
Hello.
And finally, one thing we encourage on this podcast is some balance of views to reflect the complete spectrum of opinion when it comes to Arsenal Football Club. And here is a man whose glass is defiantly half full. When it comes to optimism and a positive outlook, I'll have some of what he's on, please, Mr. Barman. He is also returning to make a second podcast appearance and has been known to have the odd email joust with the previously introduced panellist, so we might be in for some interesting exchanges. Who can tell? It's a very good evening to another sometime website contributor and another Ian, Mr. Ian Tanner.
Hello, Kevin.
Now, for the avoidance of confusion, when referring to the two Ians, I shall try to remember to address them as either Mr. Henry or Mr. Tanner, or Mr. H or Mr. T, whatever comes naturally, which feels kind of appropriate given their respective professional standings. So let's get on with discussing the questions submitted by our listeners via email and Twitter, as well as anything that comes up. So, gentlemen, last night, a interesting evening. I think everyone would agree Arsenal were quite fortunate to come away with a point. Mr. Tanner, do you think this indicates Arsenal are going to be fortunate this season generally? Or did you see things last night that made you think it might not be so easy as that?
Well, I didn't see anything last night. I was out at another do. I got in at about soon after, about 8:15, and I listened to the last hour of the match on my wireless set. I will once the highlights and link are on Arsenal.com, I'll certainly get around to watching some of the match, although it's maybe through my fingers or behind the sofa, whichever's appropriate. I think luck, I mean, we've certainly been lucky in the last two games, it would seem, because, I mean, as you put in on your Southampton resume, I mean, we were pretty lucky to get a win. I mean, Koscielny, I would have blown if I'd been the referee, and as you said, we'd have been furious if the same thing had happened at the other end. But I think let's not forget that often Arsenal dominate games, and you know, we look and think they're leading 1-0 and they should have been 4 or 5 up, and then the opposition get a draw and we say same old Arsenal, and you know, that's the mark of a poor team or as appropriate or a good team that can play badly and get a draw. And let's face it, from what I understand, it will be nearly got a winner. But so yeah, who knows? But I think it's probably still too early in the season. Let's see. I'll get all our players back first, or some more of them.
Okay, Laith, you were actually there.
Yeah.
In the stadium, covering the match for the Islington Gazette, and do you think they're going to win this group?
God. I've got to say, first of all, I am absolutely shattered, and the only reason I'm here is because of you, Kev. So I've got to say that.
I've
got to say as well, you're wearing a magnificent T-shirt. For the viewers back home, it's a Dennis Bergkamp top. So yeah, very pleased about that. Apart from the fact I haven't slept in 2 days, I was quite pleased with the result as a fan. I've had a season ticket for 30 odd years, and going home away all around Europe, and we pulled it out. We won a point last night when we didn't deserve to. As a journalist, the performance in the first half wasn't good enough. Wasn't anywhere near good enough. If we want to, you know, win the group, let alone challenge for the actual trophy, then we need to step up and play a lot better than we did. I think I was post-match press conference as well, and he seemed to be quite shocked at the intensity that Paris started at. And I don't know, you know, he obviously knows French football inside out. We'd like to think he should do. And he seemed genuinely shocked by their intensity, their pace, their power, their passing. I was very, very impressed by Marco Verratti, the Italian. He was running between the lines. He was feeding forward players brilliant balls to exploit the space between our lines, basically. And they just played so well that first half. And I did think they need a second goal. And I bought a keep yesterday, Lequipe, and I was having a quick read of it before the game. There was a really interesting piece by Remy Gard, actually, and he was basically comparing Cavani to Giroud, and he was basically saying Giroud has got a better conversion rate of chances. I remember reading that and just going, well, that can't be right. And when Cavani scored after 42 seconds, which incidentally I think is a record for us to concede a goal in Europe, which was quite worrying to start with, I thought, oh God, this is going to be a rout here. But yeah, I was at Emery's press conference as well after the game, and he was very disappointed. You could see by his body language. He was obviously trying to be positive in terms of praising the player, but he said he missed three good chances. And obviously Ospina played well, but Cavani was just too profligate, and he should have done far better. So to answer your original question, that was a good point, because we couldn't have afforded to lose to Paris if we want to win the league, we want to win the group, basically. You'd assume, and obviously you can't assume anything with Arsenal these days, but you'd assume we'd like to think we can get two wins from the Bulgarian team, you know, avoid defeat away to Bar and maybe win at home. So it's all down to Paris at home. If we win that, having avoided defeat yesterday, I do think we can win the group.
Okay. Do you share that confidence, Mr. Emery?
Well, I'm not sure I share confidence with a team managed by Arsene Wenger, but I do think Arsenal should be able to win the group. They were certainly lucky, as everybody said, that Cavani missed three or four chances that you would have wanted your own players to have put away. I think if Iwobi could learn to leather the ball, yes, he would have scored the winner, actually. He tried to pass it into the net from not a very good angle. But he's young, that's fine. I think, taking a point from Leith on, I think it's very worrying if Wenger was shocked by PSG's starting intensity. I mean, he must know, after all the many years that he's worked in football, to borrow one of his famous phrases, that teams will on occasion start intensively, and just because they're French doesn't mean that they can't or they won't. And he should also know that Emery, coming to that club from Sevilla, who has won many games in Europe on a European trophy, about 3 years on the trot, he knows how to play European football. Emery is a proven winner in Europe, and he will be no fool. He'll know that Arsenal have got a somewhat dodgy back four and are open to being attacked in that way. So he probably told Serge Aurier, just attack, get down the flank as quickly as possible. So that's good management to him, but it's worrying for me that Wenger doesn't seem to think ahead on those occasions.
The last two games, the central midfield pairing has been Cazorla and Coquelin. Elneny and Xhaka have been on the bench. The fact that he's picked the same two in consecutive games, and both in theory significant games, do we think that his first choice midfield is that actually Xhaka is a backup? It seems a strange decision to a lot of people.
I think it's bizarre, quite frankly, to spend all that money and praise him to the hilts, talk about him as an Emmanuel Petit and so on and so forth, and then leave him on the bench consecutively. I mean, maybe there was a case for leaving him on the bench against Southampton and playing him last night. I think his physical presence, his size, would have been an assistance. I think he does like Cazorla and Coquelin, and they played very well together for parts of last season, and maybe he's hoping to replicate that. But I think from what I've seen of Xhaka, he's a better player than Coquelin. He's got a wider range of passing. He may be a bit hot-headed on occasion, but so is Coquelin. And what I saw of Elneny last season, I think he's definitely a better player than Coquelin. So quite frankly, I find it bizarre. And the other thing about Cazorla is he's only just coming back from a very long period out. he's over 30 and you're expecting him to play 90 plus minutes week in, week out, two games a week, I'm not sure he can do that. I'd say there'd be a risk to overplaying him. So I find the whole thing a little bizarre personally, but I haven't worked a day in football.
Or even half a day in football.
Or even half a day.
I mean, my attitude was on I saw the Southampton team sheet that give Coquelin the start there with keeping Zakar and or Omeni back for Paris. Mm. But I think Coquelin was one of our better players against Southampton. So, yeah, he was in with a tackle like the terrier that he is. And maybe he felt that purely based on that performance, he should, you know, keep him in the team. So maybe it's to do with that. But, I mean, I'm sure he hasn't spent 30-odd million on a player in Zaka to have him warm on the bench the whole time. But, I mean, if we're going to progress this season, big if perhaps, and you know, play a 55-game season or whatever it happens to be, then we are going to need Elneny, who won three consecutive Player of the Month awards last season, Zakar, Coquelin et al.
Yeah. I've got to say, I'm a bit confused with Zaka at the moment because see Wenger, the way I saw it, he was praising Zaka for playing long balls and giving us a bit more muscularity in midfield, allied with his obviously his deep lying position. That's great, but I mean, surely every player who plays for Arsenal in midfield can hit a ball long. And also, if you're saying that the team's been bolstered by a defensive midfielder, then why didn't you buy it in 2008? Why didn't you buy it in 2008? So that we could have carried on and challenged for the league that year. It just seems a bit disingenuous of Wenger to say, you know, he's really changed our play or he's really improved us. Well, he should have done it 5 years ago. He should have done it 10 years ago. Well, I don't really understand. And in terms of Cazorla, I absolutely love Cazorla. I think you made a really, really good point, the fact that I don't think he's not going to play 38 league games, nowhere near. But he brings a real creativity. He brings a spark. He plays football with a smile on his face. We've all played football, albeit really badly. But you look at him for 2 minutes. You look at him for 2 minutes. You can't tell whether he's left footed or right footed. I think that's such a skill to have, basically. And the last player I can remember doing that for Arsenal was probably on Kevin's chest, as it were. Yeah. But you know, he's just Cazorla. He makes things happen.
I agree with you, but it just seems to me. Selection-wise, it seemed very strange to play the two of them, Cazorla and Coquelin together in successive games and not use Jack or Elneny, at least one of them from the start. So it'll be very interesting. We've got, who is it this weekend?
Holloway.
And then there's a
Forest
and then
Chelsea.
And Chelsea. Yeah. So he'll have to, over those three games, use the squad rather differently. And I think, I would imagine we'll see Perez probably definitely start against Forest. Giroud should start, one would assume, at least one of those games as well. He'll probably bring some youngsters against Forest, but he's now saying he's now got a squad of men and so on and so forth as opposed to kids. Well, part of the art of management that I don't think he's shown over the last few seasons is managing a squad and bringing players in and out of the team as required through the season. I think we would all accept you can't actually play the same 11 week in, week out in the Premier League and the Champions League. So a core part of management nowadays in top level football is recognise that you've got to make probably two or three changes most big games anyway, because you'll probably have somebody who's slightly injured or definitely injured, and you've got to rotate the squad more. He's now got, actually when you look at it, he has got two experienced players for every position. And with Welbeck and Mertesacker fit, he's actually got more than two in quite a few positions. So he hasn't had that luxury for some time. Mm. Now let's see whether he's got the management skill, the modern management skills to do that.
One final point on the Cazorla. You mentioned about him being two-footed. Wenger has said that he is the most two-footed player that he's ever worked with.
Right ahead of Bergkamp?
Oh, yeah. Has he said that? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah.
I mean, in terms of selection, what's fascinated me is that Giroud hasn't started a game. So we've had, from memory, I think Alexis, obviously, we had Perez one game as the nominal front man. I'm not sure if Theo played one game or not as a forward, but the memory's not what it was. But anyway, the long and short of it is that these players are what you'd call false number nines. Mm. Do you think that's going to be the tactic this season, that Arsenal is determined to make it work, or
is Giroud going to come back? Because I'm amazed he hasn't started a game yet.
I mean, with Giroud, I don't think he can win the Premier League with him as your centre forward every week in, week out. He brings a lot of qualities to the team. He's obviously good in the air. He can hold the ball up, you know, damn him with faint praise by saying that. And he will get a share of goals. He's only 14, 15 goals off 100 goals for Arsenal. It's only like 17 players have done that in Arsenal's history. So he obviously deserves respect for what he's done. But I just can't see how someone as immobile as Giroud can be the answer, basically. So maybe Wenger is looking at that and deciding to have more flexible sort of forward. I watched Perez closely on the Southampton game. And, I mean, we interviewed Wenger after the game, basically, and he was just saying he wasn't near the intensity of English football. So hopefully that will come, because he looks a very nippy, pacey player. But as a false nine, I'm not sure. He looked more of a winger to me, Perez. So I think he probably could play false nine, but I don't know how influential would be.
Well, he scored 17 goals, I think, in Spain, and he has to be pretty good, I think, to...
Well, yeah, Ronaldo gets 60 this season, doesn't he? He got 30 from that night, so...
I'm not sure. I mean, I think I'm thinking of players outside of Barcelona and Real Madrid. So yeah. 17 is in a losing side. Yeah. Is
I don't think he'll get anywhere near that.
Advanced. No, I don't. That may or may not be the case. Depends on how he plays. But going back to Kevin's question, is a false nine the way forward? If it is, it's a bit of an odd one, because that's quite a change from the way in which we played for the last X years. And do the players really know how to play that system? And you've got, if that's the case, then effectively your front three as of last night, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Iwobi and Sanchez have got to interchange a great deal more, seems to me. And it also seems to me that your nominal wide players in that system have got to be capable of scoring more goals than Oxlade-Chamberlain certainly does. Now, I'll give Iwobi the benefit of the fact that he's managed to come into the side, and you know, it was his shot that led to the equaliser, so fair enough. But it requires a different set of skills that we've not seen from Arsenal players of late. Now, maybe they can do it, but it does strike me, if you're going to change the system radically, you've got to coach it into them. And that begs the question about whether Arsenal really are coached in the way that we suspect that Man City and other teams are.
I mean, obviously, fluidity is a key thing in the team, and I mean, the problem I have with it is that you need more people in the box sometimes than we seem to manage, and that's a general problem, whatever system we seem to play.
You need more balls in the box as well.
Yeah, in more ways than one. I mean, at the other end of the pitch, you know, we also had an interesting selection decision. I'm going to actually bring in some of our tweeters here. So we've got a couple. Regular Gooner contributor and occasional podcast guest Simon Rose has tweeted, past Chelsea success aside and known mutual weaknesses on the table, is the current Czech really any better than Ospina? And one from Daryl Lewis, who asks, can Wenger drop Ospina after last night's performance against PSG? So why do you think Ospina was picked last night?
Well, going back, obviously, Simon, I've got a lot of time, Simon, he's a good lad and he obviously knows his Arsenal, and that's a really good question. The post-match press conference last night, someone actually asked Wenger, you know, will Peter Cech come back on Saturday? And he refused to be drawn on it. He basically backtracked and sort of just changed the angle of the question and said, you know, we've got two world-class keepers. I think Ospina has genuinely put Cech under pressure now, which I couldn't have said a year ago about that. I'm not sure he's brilliant in the air in English football, but he looked really good last night. I don't know whether he's been listening to Pep Guardiola talk about the sort of sweeper keeper, but his timing in terms of interceptions and coming outside the box was impeccable last night, and he really did look good. Peter Cech, I absolutely love Peter Cech. I respect him. You know, forget about the Arsenal-Chelsea rivalry. He was a brilliant keeper for Chelsea, and anyone who says otherwise, you know, they're not for me, basically. I just wonder whether he's almost like the sort of Pat Jennings of the 21st century, where he's a great career at another London club, and he's come to us just on the sort of downswing of his capabilities, really. Was it Man City last year? I covered the game at Man City, and he gets beaten by low shots outside the box on a regular basis, and I'm a bit worried about that, really. And even in the air, he just seems to have lost a bit of authority. So I do think Wenger is seriously thinking about whether Ospina can challenge to be number one.
I think he said last night in the press conference, Wenger, that there is like not so much a pecking order, but a mutually agreed order at the moment.
Yeah, he did say that.
Which
is
kind of saying, well, Cech is going to play in the Premier League and Ospina in the Champions League until further notice.
Yeah, but the question that was put to him after the follow-up question was, will Cech start on Saturday?
Yeah, but he's never going to answer that, but I'm sure he will start on Saturday. I really think so.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, I mean, I think Ospina played very well last night. He played better than I think I've ever seen him play, so credit to him. And I personally, I thought it was a bit of a gamble, to put it mildly, when I saw that he was playing, but, you know, it worked. I think he's too small a keeper. I think he's only just 6 foot, or maybe only 5'11". I think that's too small to be a keeper in the Premier League, given the nature of the number of crosses that will come in and the size of some centre-forwards at certain other clubs. And I think if for those kind of games, Cech definitely has the advantage. Now, if Wenger looks at this performance and thinks, well, maybe he plays that well, maybe I will use him against a team like Man City who may play that way. Maybe he's trying to be quite cute and think, well, I'll play a goalkeeper according to the nature of the opposition. It seems quite a high-risk strategy to me, but maybe that's what he's thinking. But
yeah, I don't know if it's horses courses. I think you've got to pick your keeper.
I would agree.
But I think there is a sea change in terms of his, not so much belief in Cech, but him being forced into making a decision because of Ospina's performance last night. I genuinely believe that.
I know Barcelona, when they won the Champions League 2 years ago, had a policy of a different keeper for Europe to the league. I can't remember Real Madrid last year whether they did the same or they stuck with the same guy.
Well, it looks as though PSG were doing the same, because that keeper who played last night hadn't played in the league and they'd been playing.
Right. So it's becoming a bit of a vogue.
Yeah. So.
Okay. All right. There's a couple of tweeters. I'll just mention them. I don't think we need to really respond necessarily, but as they've bothered to send us offerings, I will mention them. Real Gone Kid tweeted, apart from making money, what is the point of Arsenal in the Champions League? And we could go all night about that one. And regular tweeter Jonathan Houseman said, with a squad stacked with options, did the lineup the PSG show the manager has no idea how to use it? I would actually paraphrase that with a request for a one-word answer from all the panellists, which is simply this. Would you have started Olivier Giroud last night, yes or no? Mr. Henry?
No.
Leith?
No.
Mr. Tom?
No, I wouldn't.
Interesting. So, you wouldn't have started Giroud. All right. Anyway, so that's PSG done with. Let's look
I
at...
I could say also that not only did he not start the game, he didn't finish it either.
That's
very good point.
Let's not forget that.
For so the second season running in match day one of the Champions League.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay, let's do this one then. Joe Gagliardi, who is also a regular tweeter for the podcast questions, asked this month, he would be interested to hear the panel's opinion on whether this will be Arsene Wenger's final season. Do we see any signs of white smoke or anything similar from the Emirates in terms of anything that's happened that indicates Arsene is considering, or even the board are considering, changing the manager at the end of the current season? Any thoughts on that?
I think the bottom line is money. So if it comes to Christmas and we're maybe not in the top four, maybe hopefully we will be in the top four at the end of the season, but if we're floundering fourth, fifth, sixth, there's a lot of discontent on the terraces or in the seats. You know, and it comes to his contract renewals or contract talks, there will be a lot of people who are really, really unhappy. I was at, I covered the game at Leicester, and obviously on the back of the 4-3 defeat against Liverpool, there was almost a mutinous feeling in the away end. Obviously, that was placated slightly by the winner Watford and our subsequent form, but there is a real sense that a lot of old school Arsenal fans, supporters, just like anyone else, will not renew their season tickets if Wenger's given another 2 or 3 years. Like, this is just a straw poll, you know. I'm not going to get into Wenger out of Brigade or Arsenal knows best. It is too tedious to talk about tonight. But I do genuinely think the club will look at the bottom line. And if a lot of people turn around, you know, Black Scar Brigade and all the rest of them, who are genuine fans, if they turn around and say, we're not going to renew if Wenger's going to be given another 2 or 3 years, then I think that might influence the board. So having said that, it's only if we're out of the top four and we're looking like we're struggling. If we're top of the league, we're challenging for, you know, second place behind Pep, then, you know, I think they might give him another couple of years. It's a bit worrying, really, because the personal abuse that Wenger gets is unacceptable as far as I'm concerned. Every other question is perfectly fair game. And he runs that club. I've seen it. It's a well-run club. We all love the club inside out. But having seen it from the inside now, he runs that club with an iron fist, basically. It's his decision. And if it was down to him, I think he'd have to carry him out in a box, basically. But the bottom line is Stan Kroenke is a money man. And if Wenger's team is not challenging for a top four spot come Christmas, or when the contract talks are going to be instigated, that might have a massive effect on it, massive impact on it. But at the moment, I would, for me, see out the year, walk away with your head held high.
I think another factor which some people have commented on is, not very widely, is what will happen with the Ozil and the Sanchez contract renewals, because they are in the last 2 years, and we all know that we want to get them signed up this year. And I wonder what those two players, given their status as our supposed two megastars, whether they will sign on if it is another 3 years for Arsene Wenger or not. I don't know. My suspicion is that they both want to win things. I'm sure they want more money, but they want to win things at the end of the day, and they haven't come here not to stand a chance of winning things. And if they don't think they're going to win something under Wenger, they'll either say, well, I'm off, in which case the club will have to sell them next summer in order to raise the money, or I'll sign subject to Wenger not being the manager. Now, whether the club would accept that, of course, is another question. But those two players may have quite a bit of power, even if they don't realise it.
I think that's an absolutely fair point, but at the same time, I think that's quite a romantic view. Obviously, every player wants to win a trophy, wants to win silverware. But at the same time, if you want 150 grand a week, who can, you know, realistically afford to pay them 150 grand a week if they say no? Then they're not going to sign. Obviously, Ozil's come from Real Madrid. He's not going to go back there. He's not going to go to Barcelona, potentially. No Italian club can sign him. They can't afford his wages. No German club. Unless he goes to, say, Man City, who don't look like they'd be interested. I think it's pragmatism rules every time, and money speaks, basically. And they're going to stay. Both of them stay all day long, I think.
Well, I hope you're right.
Going back to the original question of Wenger, I know the Highbury spy in the current issue of the Gooner, plug, is saying that every day we don't hear about a new contract. Wenger is a day closer to the end. But I think he's got false hopes there. We're not going to hear anything until February at the very earliest, I don't think. And at the end of the season, if Arsenal had a reasonable season, and you're going to say, OK, define reasonable, and if Wenger can see the squad developing, then I think he will want to stay. And if he has a bad season, I think that he will then decide to go anyway. But going on to the Ozil Sanchez, Mustafi has said that Ozil was instrumental in him coming to the club, because when they were together in Germany, obviously for the German team, of course, in the Euros, you know, they spent some time together, and Ozil was waxing lyrical. And you know, we're trying to, you know, Wenger said, you know, they're opening talks now with Ozil and Sanchez, so yeah, they're not going to be in a position to say, you know, to make demands about Wenger. But I think if they did make demands about Wenger, it would be more along the lines of they want him to stay rather than they want him to go. Yeah. I really do.
I mean, the only thing I would say in terms of the wages is that if they did call the club's bluff, they could see out the contract, and then the wages wouldn't be a problem, because they got such a great sign-on fee. You know, that is an option. In this day and age, it is agents that are calling the shots more than anybody.
I mean, how old is Ozil? 27, 28? So, you know, presumably at the end of the next 2 years, he'll be pushing 29, 30. So, No one's going to give him a 4-year contract.
Mm. Okay. I mean, you know, we'll talk about the manager. He said that the players, and well, this is the first podcast of the season, so we've got to reflect on the season so far. He said after the Liverpool game that the players weren't ready. Why do you think they weren't ready?
I've got a lot of respect for Wenger, always have done. I'm not going to get into which side I'm on, but for me that comment was a scandalous dereliction of duty. To say at the first day of the season your players aren't ready is simply unacceptable. You work all pre-season, you work from the day the season, previous season finishes, to build up to your first game of the season. End of story. Obviously with the transfer window going to the 1st of September, 31st of August, whatever, you know, that's changed things over the years. But you work for that first day of the season. No excuses. You can't say we're not ready. And that was almost a testament to his lack of activity in the transfer market over the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years, basically. Yeah. To say, it was so frustrating to say that, was just an insult to a lot of Arsenal fans, including myself. And as a journalist, for someone to say that, it just, were you like, well, what's your strategy then? Well, why are you saying that?
Mr. Tanner, did it surprise you to hear that?
Yes, because he's normally more politic and diplomatic than that. I mean, it was, a confluence of misfortunes. I mean, we'd obviously lost Gabriel and Mertesacker in pre-season, which you can't legislate for. Okay, he knew Koscielny was going to be back. He's adamant that they have their 4 weeks off from their last day of playing, and you know, he said legally we'd have to give them that time off.
Which turned out not to be true.
Yeah, well, and a lot of the other French players actually played the first game of the season.
But if he wants them to have time off, because as he would say, well, if I do play them and they get injured after 3 weeks, you're going to be criticising me for that, which is a fair point. We would. Mm. So, Sanchez is on the bench and that. So, you've got the 20-year-old Holding, who I thought passed brilliantly and is really run for the future. Yeah. The only trouble, of course, is that he only costs £2 million, so he can't be all that good. And then you've got Chambers, who is obviously as nervous as ever, but who Wenger thinks is going to be a great centre back one day. Let's see. You know, we'd lost faith in Ramsey before, and then suddenly he had that wonderful season. So, you know, who knows what he might do great guns at Middlesbrough. Let's hope so. So it was a makeshift team, but it was one that was having the better of that game against Liverpool. Obviously, we should have been at least two up. We were talking about this earlier about missing opportunities, we missed the penalty. And then they had that nonsense of a free kick before half time from which they scored a brilliant goal, and we all know what happened from there. Yeah. So,
but just in terms of defending, we looked all at sea.
Yes, we did after that.
You're absolutely right about Ramsey as well, but for me it's going out on loan. I know Ramsey went to Forest for a month or two and Cardiff as well, I think. But you go out on loan, you're not coming back in with Wenger.
I don't know about that.
Well, and I think that applies to Jack Wilshere as well.
No, maybe he's lying, but he said about Wilshere, he is a world-class player, I'm his number one fan.
Yeah, but that's just a statement. He's not referred to anything about him coming back.
A week before Gnabry was sold, he said, I'm going to extend his contract. So, yeah. But to go back to the players being ready, or the team not being ready for the Liverpool game, I agree with Leigh that it's a scandalous thing for him to admit. And on the centre-back issue, Mertesacker was injured and then Gabriel got injured, or was it the other way around?
No, that's right.
And he had several weeks before the start of the season to do something, and he didn't. They could have got Mustafi in earlier, they could have got another centre-back in earlier. He should have, if Mustafi was the centre-back they wanted, they should and could have made the effort to have signed him much earlier in the window. Arsenal have got the money. They are supposedly the biggest draw in London, or maybe equal with Chelsea, who knows, in terms of players coming in. They were reportedly quibbling over stage payments for Perez at one point, and indeed for Mustafi. They needed a centre-back even before Mertesacker and Gabriel got injured.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when Mertesacker got injured, the failure to do anything then was pretty scandalous. And then to delay it even longer after Gabriel, I just found it utterly mystifying. And for somebody who wants to clearly win trophies at Arsenal, I don't understand why he continually ties one of his hands behind his back by failing to address weaknesses in the squad.
You're absolutely right. That is the crux of it for so many Arsenal fans and so many people looking on as well. Why doesn't he just strengthen the squad? We've got the money now. And even if, you know, our reserves aren't as wildly sort of, you know, as large as people say, we can still buy players that are good enough to supplement and strengthen our squad. And he's resolutely refused to do that over the years. And it's so frustrating. It's not like, you know, Neil Warnock or people like that, Harry Redknapp at QPR, when they bought 40 players and can't get into jail. Mm. It's just the most simplest thing to buy a player, get him into your side, you know, strengthen. And also, it gives players there a lift. And it also makes them think, well, actually, someone's competing for my place here. I need to step up.
And done it at the beginning of the summer. That's the
beginning. Yeah, I've done it at the beginning. Yeah, absolutely.
But if you're right, and I'm kind of playing devil's advocate here, because again, Wenger has said that you know, it's not like going to a supermarket and, you know, getting one off the shelf, which is a bit of a pain. Yeah. But, you know, Vermaelen, who wasn't good enough, he hadn't been made captain, and I wish I'd put this in a blog because I was thinking this, but I never got around to doing it. It was Mertesacker and Koscielny became the front two. So you got, you know, non-playing captain just writes the nose. You know, if he's good enough for Barcelona, then, you know,
but he never played
for them. But for their squad, that's the point. So there obviously aren't that many high quality that's better than what they've
got. It just reminds me of George Graham's last days, when he would always say, you know, if the quality's there, I'll buy, but he never did. It's just, you can pick up a player like Rob Holding. There must be Taylor Bennett. Championship football is a lot stronger than it was 5 years ago, and that feeds down into lower levels as well. Yeah. There are players out there who are good enough to play in the Premier League, and there are players out there who are good enough to play for Arsenal, I think. And it's just for him not to buy and strengthen and to say in the first game of the season we weren't ready. It's just no, Arsene, come on.
Well, if I have to say one thing, I mean, you mentioned Tenor Penny, and that reminds me, I think, of your editorial talking Reds in the first. This year's first Goon. I think you said that foreigners are ten a penny. Well, obviously they're not, because they're so bloody expensive. But, you know, I take the point. But yeah, a bit more to it.
Okay. I mean, do we think this is a case of Arsenal's scouting system not working properly, or Arsene not listening to his scouts in terms of us not securing players?
Yeah, again, it goes back to the fact everyone's said it for years, he's missing that foil. He's missing David Dean. I interviewed David Dean in March, and he's a very, very charismatic man. He cares about Arsenal so much. His knowledge is amazing. He's very articulate. You can imagine them sitting there with the Campbell deal and Wenger going, well, I'm not sure. And Dean would have pushed that through. And Wenger will just, he's a very cautious man. He's inherently cautious. And he will not gamble. And in a way, that's good, because no one wants to turn into a Leeds. No one wants to, you know, have a financial mismanagement. But at the same time, he needs a foil to say, look, Arsenal, come on, just, let's take a gamble on it. If you buy an English player, it doesn't work, you can still flog it on to someone else for half the price, and you haven't lost that much. He's lacking that, and his judgment, I don't think, is as good as it was 20 years ago.
So are you then saying that he's listening to his scouts, but then not going through with the deals?
Yeah. And also, without criticising anyone at Arsenal, because there's a really good team there. Someone like Leicester, someone like Steve Walsh, who's obviously been poached from Leicester now, the way he identified young talent was reminiscent of Arsenal 20 years ago. And you could argue Graham Carr did that at Newcastle a few years back. Wenger hasn't got the surprise of the French league now, knowing players inside out. Football's caught up with him, and there's something lacking there, basically.
Okay. All right, well, let's look at things going the other way. So we mentioned briefly Jack Wilshere, gone to Bournemouth for a season. Do you think that he has a future at Arsenal?
Well, I'm optimistic, yes, I do. I think he'll have a good season down at Bournemouth, of course, subject to him remaining fit. And I think if he does do that and he gets back in the England squad, which I think is quite likely, I think the pressure will be very much on Arsenal to bring him back and to integrate him into the team. And I think Wenger would actually lose a bit of credibility if he doesn't do that, if he has a good season. And yeah, I at the moment I'm optimistic, and I hope he does come back.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, if you didn't see it, audience, it was on Football Focus this last Saturday. They actually went down to Bournemouth and was looking at the situation. And Afobe, who obviously, you know, ex-Arsenal, has gone there for a record price at the time, was very glowing about Eddie Howe. And I was surprised when I heard the news that he'd gone down there, but it actually does make perfect sense to me. And yeah, they were saying in the interview that they're having to wrap him up in cotton wool. I hadn't realised. I mean, even Wenger said he didn't play last season. Well, he's actually not played for two seasons. His last full game was the defeat against Southampton, 24th of September or whatever it was, of two years ago. That is a hell of a long time at any age to be out. But if he can get back to, he's not even training properly at the moment. Yeah. But I think he came on our first, the first home game of the season, and he did make a bit of a difference there. Obviously, that's about 15 minutes or so. But no, I think if he can get his body back, then yeah, he could do it.
Yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely agree with what you say in terms of Bournemouth. I covered the game down there last season. I actually interviewed Afobe, and I was in a press conference with Howe. They're a very, very impressive club. Howe is a very, very impressive young English manager. Afobe talks well. They're a good club. And if you're Jack Wilshere at 24, I don't think he would have got a lot out of games, really. I think going to Bournemouth is a very, very good move for him. But having said that, I don't think he's got an Arsenal career. And it's such a shame, because it's not one person's fault. It's Wenger's fault in a way. It's Jack Wilshere's fault in a way. Late nights, lack of application, arguably. It's his advisor's fault as well. Just telling him not to, to knuckle down. It's bad luck as well in terms of injuries. You know, reading Dennis Bergkamp's excellent book by David Winner a couple of years ago, Bergkamp talked about strapping his ankles and the fact that he tried to find the thinnest material to strap the ankles, and even then, he said the ball felt like it was bouncing off his ankles. Jack Wilshere has got massive strapping on both ankles. Jack Wilshere's second touch is always a tackle because of his bravery and because of the way he plays, and he always looks to drive on. And it was quite interesting that Wenger said his best position was not so deep. You know, he's a very attacking player, and he's almost been penalised by his bravery and his courage. But at the same time, there's a lot of other baggage around him, and I just don't think he's got a career at Arsenal.
He's got Ozil ahead of him, because he's saying that he'd like to see him further forward.
Where's he going to fit now? Arguably six players in front of him.
Yeah, he's got Ozil certainly in front of his world class.
And it's a tragedy, because I love it. I love homegrown players. And I'm a Londoner, but I live in Hitchin, and Jack Wilshere is a bit of a local legend in Hitchin. That's where he's from. And you know, I want him to do so well for Arsenal, but I think at the age of 24, having, as you rightly say, not played for 2 years, to lose those 2 years out of your career at that age, there's no coming back because he's at the top level. When he was 19,
Barcelona game.
And for Guardiola to highlight that, although admittedly it was a backhanded compliment in terms of we've got 20 players at the Masters to do that. Yeah. But at the same time, we were at the game, and he was brilliant that night. And that's what we wanted to see for the next 5-10 years of his career. And for whatever reason, it's fallen by the wayside. I wish him well, and I hope he does come back to Arsenal and has a brilliant career, but I just can't see it. I really can't.
Okay. Just to go back to one of our offerings from Twitter. Dennis, whose handle is Batistutor, or Batistutor, which is a pun on the Argentinian forward, I suspect. He says, it seems like Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is nailed on to start most games. Is he worthy of a starting berth? He's had a run of starts. Do we see any signs of improvement from the Ox? Or do we think this is an experiment by Arsenal just to make sure that he's had his chance?
I was actually discussing this in a late night bar in Montmartre in Paris last night with a friend. I'm sure we all remember the Palace game a couple of years ago when he played centre midfield. We beat him 2-0. It was February 2013, was it? 14. He was brilliant. It was almost Brian Robson-esque, the way he was powerful, the way he ran the show, the way he was prompting attacks, but also equally he was being quite defensively competent. And that is, for me, his best position, centre midfield. But will he play centre midfield for Arsenal on a regular basis?
Not with all our new buyers.
No, absolutely not. He's one of those players. I interviewed him obviously for the Gooner last year, and he seems a very complex player, very complex personality, I should say. He's obviously got all the talent in the world, but it just seemed like there was a slight lack of belief in his abilities. I think he's a player who needs a run of 10, 20, 30 games in a row in one position, playing 90 minutes every game and avoiding injury. and then we'll see where we go. But that's not going to happen.
He never looks happy when he's substituted.
No, no. Well, I suppose you could argue that's quite a good fix.
Disappointed, I think.
Yeah. But you know, I would have him centre mid every game.
I was actually at the Valley because I'm a closet Saints fan and Bournemouth fan because that's from where I grew up. And when he got injured, he had his shoulder injury when Southampton that night disappeared into a hoarding and wasn't seen for several months after that. But there was on Arsenal.com, my Bible, of course, there was Wenger talked about the Ox, Wilshere and Theo the pre-season, saying this is a big season for all of them, which obviously it is for various reasons. But a year ago, Joel Campbell was keeping the Ox out of the team. You could argue that this season the Ox has sent Campbell on loan for the season.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's going to give him a run, but at the end of the day, it's a meritocracy if he doesn't do well. And I almost think that he wants to do so well.
Yeah.
He's looking to beat too many players. Yeah. He gives the ball away a lot. He's after the million-dollar run or the fantastic shot from outside the box to cap it all off. If he almost tries too hard, it seems, if that's not a silly thing to say.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
But, you know, he is still very, very young. Time is on his side.
Is he? Well, how old is he?
22, shall I?
Okay.
Yeah.
Ian, do you think he's worth a starting place?
Mr. Henry,
sorry.
I'm not quite sure last night who else could have played in that position, unless he put Sanchez or Iwobi on the right and played a more conventional centre-forward. Decided to play with Sanchez as the central striker yesterday and not wanting to start Perez, there wasn't really anybody else to play there.
Well, he would have one time played Cazorla as a wide attacker.
Yeah, but he's gone off that in recent years.
Yes, it hasn't happened for a long time.
So I didn't think he played too badly last night. I thought he was also tracking back defensively, supporting Monreal on occasion or when he was on the other side, Bellerin. So it's a bit early in the season to be sure. I'd like to think, give him a chance. I don't see why not.
Mm-hmm.
I think more interestingly would be when Ramsey is fit, where's he going to play and whether he'll have to play back on the right as he has done in the not-too-distant parts of last season. So that's a more interesting one.
Mm, absolutely. Let's look at the new signings then and just give our thoughts on their contribution so far. Let's start with Granit Xhaka. Have we seen enough to agree with Arsene's belief that this is another Emmanuel Petit in the making?
No, he hasn't played enough yet, to be honest.
Okay.
I don't think we've seen enough of him to know that.
Right. Okay.
Which is partly why I was bemused that he hadn't started out the last two games.
Yes, I mean, certainly quite an expensive player. So we're obviously hoping for great things. Latha, you got any views?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit wary when players sort of blow their own trumpet in terms of I'm tough, I'm hard, I can cope with the English league. And then I looked at him at Leicester and he looked slightly bewildered. He had a better game at Watford. And I think he will be a really good player for Arsenal. But what worries me slightly is his disciplinary record, or I wouldn't go as far as say temperament, but 5 red cards in 2 years in Germany. He to be fair, when he came against Liverpool, he committed more tackles, he made more tackles in the 15 minutes that he played than any other player on the pitch, any other Arsenal player, I should say. So he's obviously got that tenacity and he's got that bite and he's got that devil that we need. But at the same time, I'm a bit worried. I want to see him play 20-30 league games in a row, I should say, see where he gets, basically, because he's what we need. We need a tough player. I just hope he is that tough player, rather than him saying he's a tough player and not delivering, basically.
I would agree with all of that. Yeah, I think I haven't seen enough of him yet. Invariably, when Arsene's asked Wax Lurica about a player, he mentions the I word, intelligence. and he has with Xhaka as well. But then when I sort of check through at the international break, the first of many, obviously, and I see that his team are leading 2-0 and he's got sent off in the third minute of injury time. I'm thinking, maybe he just can't help himself. Yeah. Maybe he just can't. It's not like I've never been a high professional sports or anything like that level. Maybe it's not like a switch that you can turn off and on, this competitiveness, but you think, well, yeah, for goodness sake, why get a second yellow or a straight red under such circumstances?
Yeah, it is about controlling your emotions.
So that could be a worry.
And temperament, and it is a bit worrying, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Olivier Giroud did the same thing last night, to be honest.
I wonder, Rob Holding was bought for $2 million and went straight into the first team squad. A bit of me thinks there's a requirement to address quotas in terms of that purchase, the number of domestic developed players. But generally, people seem to have a positive view on his contributions so far, in spite of a Liverpool game. Do we concur with that?
Again, from the little I've seen, yeah, I mean, certainly the Liverpool game, my first thought was his long passing out of defence looked really top quality. I thought, wow, yeah, he's a cool customer on the ball.
Yeah, yeah, he seems like he's got a good temperament as well. Yeah. And he was building a bit of a relationship with Koscielny as well, just in terms of, you know, the centre-half pairing, with who's going to go, who's going to stay, the gap between the two as well. And I think he's going to do well for Arsenal, but that's what we said about Chambers. And that's what we said about Jenkinson, albeit a right back. Who knows?
Okay. Any views at all, Mr. Henry?
Well, I didn't see the Liverpool game, so I don't know. I think you may be right about the quotas issue, particularly with the decision to put Chambers out on loan. So, but yeah, I mean, given, you know, with all these players, unfortunately, it's a bit early to say. We haven't seen them play enough to know, but at 2 million or whatever it was, 2.5 million, I don't think we can worry too much about the fees, certainly, and I can't see there's too much of a risk. And from what I heard about Liverpool performance and the Leicester game he played, I think he played
well, Leicester.
Yeah, then good luck to him.
Yeah.
We've got an email from Alan Thompson, who asks, he first of all says, just what difference is there between Callum Chambers and Rob Holding? Before then, continuing, was Chambers an expensive scouting error? Now, Chambers has gone to Middlesbrough for a season. Does it feel like there's room for him to return?
Depends on Mertesacker, I guess, and whether they stick with Gabriel in the long run, whether he plays any decent football up there, I would like to think. Mm-hmm. I mean, was he an expensive scouting mistake? He was a Premier League player when they bought him. There's always a premium for English players, whether we like it or not. I think he was unlucky that he started at right back when he clearly isn't quick enough to be a right back. He's a centre back, but he couldn't get games at centre back. He was played at right back. I think he got roasted in there against Swansea in particular.
Yeah.
Another one.
Yeah.
So you know, you brought in as one thing. I think he got called up for England after about two games for Arsenal as well, which I don't think actually helped in terms of, you know, making him out to be bigger and better than he was. And he was, to my mind, he was played out of position. So.
I think you're absolutely right. I think, you know, as you said, he suffered from being a utility player almost in terms of, is he a right back, is he a centre back?
Well, then he was played one game in central midfield as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. It just would never work.
It was like
Gareth Southgate playing for England against Germany in that position. But I genuinely believe that Wenger thought he was going to be better than what he has turned out to be, and whether that's because he's been mucked around in terms of different positions, or whether, like you say, that Southampton, that Swansea game has sort of rapidly changed Wenger's opinion, I don't know. But I genuinely think Wenger thought Chambers was going to come on, kick on, and he hasn't.
But I think it also comes down to the fact that, to the best of our knowledge, we don't have sufficient specialist defensive coaching going on, and you can't bring in a player at 18 or 19, even with a big price tag, and expect them to be fully attuned, Premiership hardened, and so forth. And I think you can already see, for example, Guardiola's impact on John Stones at Man City.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's paid, what, best part of 2.5, maybe three times for Stones what we pay for Chambers. And I think that's probably going to turn out to be quite a good investment. Now, is Stones so much better than Chambers, or is it the fact that Guardiola knows how to coach a central defender?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think it's a bit of both. Stones is a Rio Ferdinand type player when you can bring the ball out in defence. Mm. And I could never understand the criticism he got playing for England when he slipped. And I can't remember what game it was for, but if you're going to do that as a defender, then you need your manager to back you, basically. And Guardiola will back him all day long. So long as he's trying to play that ball out of defence, Guardiola won't have a problem with that. And I think that's great. Mm. And just in terms of sort of man management, Wenger is very, very, very loyal to his players. But Guardiola's got something else about him. I was watching him after the Manchester derby on Saturday, and the psychology he's got, and I don't know whether it's instinctive or whether it's planned, but he, at the end of the game, went to his older players, more mature players, like Bakary Sagna, gave him a hug, shook his hand, looked him in the eye. He went over to Sterling and a couple of other sort of youths. He gave him a little cheeky tap on the cheek and literally spun around immediately. His players know he's the boss, basically. I don't know if Wenger's lost that a little bit in terms of, maybe not respect, but just the fact that players think they can sort of hide under the radar. Guardiola will absolutely get every one of his players playing for him. Cool. And if he doesn't, he'll bomb them out straight away.
As we've seen,
yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting to see that Manchester City have started the season fairly well, without Kompany, effectively without Touré, and at the moment without Aguero.
Yeah.
And Joe Hart. Some people would call that the spine of a team. Anyway, we're getting close to the end, but I've got to bring in this one. You may not have a view on this, I don't know, but I'm going to read it out. It's from Mike Francis, the founder of The Gooner, the original editor.
Legend.
And he says, do we have any views, ideas on how to prevent away ticket allocation being a closed shop for those without 20-plus credits? So just to bring everyone up to speed, in case they're not aware of this, basically away tickets are allocated depending on how many matches you've been to in the past two seasons. And tickets are now, for the Premier League, capped at £30. And the club even give money off that. They give a £4 reduction on that. So they're not expensive. Do we have any innovative ideas to give other people the chance of seeing away matches?
That is a very good question by Mike. What I would say, I mean, I looked at, I was an away scheme member many years ago. Like all of us, we've all been away games, and I used to go to a lot of away games. They're the loyalists that are loyal. You know, you can argue, oh yeah, I watch Arsenal, I do this and that. If you're going to put your money where your mouth is and travel up and down the country, all across Europe, pre-season friendlies on another continent, for some people I know, and we all know, and that deserves massive respect. These people are really, really loyal. So it's not so much they're in the wrong. Who's in the wrong, though? You know, if you're getting 1,800 tickets for Paris, you know, when we scored, there was a lot of Arsenal fans jumping up in dotted sort of packs around the ground. You're going to go. Arsenal fans are the loyalists and loyal. I think we've sold out every away league game this century, basically. So what's the option? Maybe you could force the Premier League to give a bigger away allocation. But in terms of, if you're getting 3,000 tickets, I think it's the fairest way at the moment. I did phone the club last season, just to see if what the score was with the away ticket scheme. And they said there was a 4-year waiting list.
Wow.
So, and obviously with the prices going down, it's probably longer now. And then the fact that, the FSF worked really hard to get 20 is plenty, admittedly it was £30. My only bugbear with that is I don't want to see on Twitter certain people putting 20 tickets on a tweet saying, I've got £5,000 worth in my pocket. I want to see loyal fans going to every game. And if it's only 800 tickets, they're the 1,800 most loyal fans. They deserve to come. Obviously, in terms of broadening that sort of reach, what can you do? I don't know. I mean, we got, 3,200 for Forest? Then we got an extra 400, 500, 600, and that's sold out at no credit. So, the demand is there. I think it's the fairest way at the moment. It's not fair, but it is the fairest way.
Unless you say you can only go to three-quarters of the away games.
I'm
playing devil's advocate. I'm trying to think how you can do that. So
it's caught some pint pots. And you're absolutely right. I mean, it was a choice that I made last night, to do something else first.
Yeah.
And so, I'm an Arsenal through and through, absolutely. But there are people watching this. You guys, you were at Paris, and I wasn't. I've been. You can try telling Maria Petri that she's got to miss a game. I mean, she said to me, I think you were there at the time, at some event, she said, Arsenal is my life. And she's there for the ladies and, Barnett, so Underhill, and we were playing there.
Yeah,
everywhere.
Absolutely. There's a local John Williams who does the same thing.
You can't tell people that they can't go.
Maybe they could separate a percentage for a ballot or something.
I suppose you could say, well, we're going to hold back 10% of 1,800 and just have a lucky dip, as it were. I don't know, but I just think that the people who are there at the moment, the loyalists are loyal. Good luck to them.
Okay, I'm just going to name check a few people who we didn't ask questions because we kind of covered them in other ways. Ahmed El Tayeb, apologies if I've mispronounced that. Shiwori Adaribbon, who asked cheekily, will it take half the midfield to get injured before Wenger gets the lineup right?
And probably.
Darren at Arsenal One, I will, obviously a famous tweeter, I will actually ask his question a different way. He asks, is this team good enough to finish fourth, let alone win anything? I will ask now a yes or no question. Will Arsenal finish in the top four in the Premier League this season at the end of May? Mr. Henry?
No.
Leith?
All day long.
Yes. And Mr. Tanner?
Yes, definitely.
So that's a 2-1 vote to say yes, they will. That's it for those that contributed questions. Thank you very much for them. Oh, hang on. No, I've got one more, which is to thank Sean Macca 5, who was on a separate sheet, so I've missed him out. It seems inevitable that Arsene Wenger will get another contract. How many more years do you think he'll stay here squandering it all? That's a bit of a cheeky one. Well, and he also asks, it seems the status quo of the club is locked down. What are the chances of any positive change and when? It seems hopeless.
What is positive change? Yeah.
Well, when he says the status quo of the club, I'm assuming he means A, the manager, and B, the ownership.
It's easy to say Lismanov should take charge.
Well, I don't know. He's asking us to debate that. Mm. All I will say, Sean, is that everything has its price. Mm. So if Sam is offered enough money, things will change. If you win the lottery tomorrow, maybe you'll be the one owning the club next week. I don't know.
But even the current rollover is good enough.
Many thanks for your question anyway. I will now conclude by plugging the current issue with the Gooner. It's the first one of the current season. It went on sale at the Liverpool home match, and such is the dearth of home fixtures, it will still be available for the game against Chelsea and also Basel. If you haven't purchased it yet, if you do pick it up at the stadium, it comes with a free A2-sized art poster of Alexis Sanchez. Amongst other things in the issue are an interview with the invincible Lauren by our good man Leith across the table. The In the Away End is looking at the chat rooms at the time of Spurs v Newcastle, the Tottenham chat rooms. It's a great read. There's a recollection of a Clive Allen transfer saga from 1980. Debate on Aaron Ramsey's best position after his performances at the Euros, and plenty more. It's available from the online Gooner website through the shop there if you want a copy sent to you in the post, or you can buy an e-edition to read it on your tablet or phone. Details on the website. We are also looking for a couple of new sellers for the season if you are interested in making some money before going into the stadium to watch the game. Just get in touch through the website or look for the contact page at the bottom of each page. You're going to email me, which is gooner.ed@gmail.com, but it's there on the website. Finally, a reminder that you can contact us regarding anything to do with the podcast via Twitter, @GoonerPodcast. And via email, goonerpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks once again for all your questions and the topics submitted for today. With that, it is goodbye from Mr. Henry.
Goodbye.
Mr. Tanner.
Goodbye.
And he's made it to the end and could look forward to a good night's sleep if he wakes up in time to get off the train. It's farewell from Leith.
Cheers.
We will be back with another edition next month. This is your host, Kevin Witcher, saying goodbye and thanks for listening. La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company. Well, hey!